Welcome to Becoming Church, the podcast where we discuss how the message and movement of Jesus is not just about becoming Christians, but about becoming the church. I'm your host, Kristen Mockler-Young, and my guest today is Jamie Nato. She's someone who must have something to say that God wants you to hear, because we hit every bit of trouble trying to make this episode happen. I'm going to ask you for grace in advance for the things that you might hear in the background of this conversation, whether that's Jamie's dog, Bernadette, the Montessori students whose school meets in our building, or an unfortunate ill nature to my voice, which I would find out that was positive for strep throat immediately after recording this episode. But stick it out with us, because I have no doubt that you will enjoy this very honest, very real interview with Jamie Nato. Jamie Nato, welcome. This is our third try. Welcome, welcome.
We're doing it. I keep saying hi to you. Hi.
We're doing it. Oh my gosh. Thanks, listeners. We've had a little technical difficulties. I've literally had to move buildings to be here. We've moved heaven and earth and microphone studios today. So all that means is it's going to be a really great conversation.
It's going to be amazing, because we prayed it up. Satan tried to stop us. Look at us. Podcast warriors. Yeah.
Baddies for Jesus. We're not going to let him win today. Oh, I love it. Well, Jamie, I have followed you on Instagram for a long time. I think that you're very funny. And I couldn't believe that when I was scrolling my feed a couple weeks ago. I was like, why have I not brought Jamie to my listeners? So I'm so, so excited that you said yes.
Well, I was telling you earlier, you need to tell my family how funny I am, because they are not in agreement. They don't really laugh at my, I think my material is pretty good.
Yeah.
And they just look at me like side eye, you know?
Do you think, I hope this isn't offensive. Do you think that they're just like, well, mom, this is just like you in everyday life. So it's not funny.
Yeah. Because it's so like. Maybe they're just used to it. I will say my middle schooler laughs at me more, and she hates it. Like, she laughs and she's like, ugh, cringe. Like, I don't want to laugh at you.
Yes. But then she does.
Then she does. And that just goes to show my material has a huge range of an audience. Middle schoolers to middle-aged women.
Listen, it's funny when you want it to be, and it's funny when you don't want it to be. And isn't that the most practical kind of humor, you know? Well, I looked at your website and I, again, laughed out loud, because on your website, you tell people that you are a wildly popular fitness model on Instagram.
Yeah.
And so then that gave me an idea for you, which I've never done with anybody before, but I want you to introduce yourself to people with like two truths and a lie.
Okay. So I'm not a wildly popular fitness model. If you're watching this video, you're going to be like, she needs some work. I'm very soft. But two truths and a lie. Okay. I'm an avid pickleball player.
Okay.
I have 7 siblings.
Okay.
All my top teeth are fake.
What? Okay. I thought I had it figured out until I got to the last one. And then I'm like, wait, is that actually true? I don't think it is. I think that's the lie, but if it's a truth, it's a good one.
The lie is that I'm an avid pickleball player. I get it. Everyone loves pickleball, but we don't have to hear about it. We don't have to hear about it every day.
Yeah.
But my friends who play pickleball are like, they look at this new paddle. I'm like, I do not care.
Yes.
But yeah, my top teeth are like all veneers and bridges and a lot of cosmetic work.
Wow. All right. Well, they look great.
Thank you.
As do your lashes, always, ma'am. So let me.
Well, I glue those on.
Yes.
And happily, it's like, you know, people get, well, this is like totally off topic, but
totally.
You know how people love to critique women for things that they like, oh, you put a filter on, I don't know. It's like you do Botox or you do your lashes or whatever. And everybody loves a good critique. And I'm like, hey guys, you have children.
Yes. Yeah. 2 girls.
And I'm like, we have sacrificed our bodies. You know, I have four. We have just done sacrificed
yes.
our bodies. Let us have our little things that we like to do. I don't know. That's a random,
yes.
that's a random side.
No, I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. Anybody that follows me on Instagram too, they'll be like, yeah, we know. We follow her. We get it. So it's fine. It's all good. And we're going to come back to this. We are going to circle back to this whole idea of showing up on Instagram. Actually, let's just go there right now. I am playing this.
Yeah.
But let's talk about it now since we're talking about it. So you, Jamie, you write serious Christian content and you put that out yeah. on your Instagram.
Yeah.
And the next day it's like Aunt Joni or some other character you've made up, or maybe you're talking about eyelashes and filters and whatever. Talk to me about the balance of how you can show up in such a public space, being fully who you are, but with these very seemingly different like personas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that being a human? Like, we're all very complicated, layered creatures, and it's impossible to be funny all the time. Yeah. Or also, people who are funny, I think, have been deeply like traumatized. Like, I don't know how else to say it, but
we have so much material.
We have so much material. And I think just growing up in a weird Christian fundamental space,
yeah.
And then suffering just happens. Like, suffering is guaranteed in life. And I think there are things you either get through it with, you know, crying and laughing and sometimes in the same breath. Yeah. I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but
yeah. So in light of all that, do you worry about people not taking your serious stuff seriously because of like the humorous nonsense?
Yeah, I think I actually do. It's hard to show up as an embodied person and say, I'm not just a funny girl. And then when you step out and say something about maybe it's like racism or, you know, a heavy topic of the day, and you say something, I've had people be like, hey, just stick to being funny.
Mm-hmm.
And like a head pat, you know, and I'm serious. I have a deep relationship with the Lord. I have a deep like heart for women to know Jesus. I like to teach women deep theology.
Yeah.
I want, you know, I'm just very hungry to know God's word. And then when I learn something about God, I want to tell you
right.
the Greek.
Right.
So I think, yes, being, and I'm a 7 Enneagram.
Okay.
Being like a fun, funny, people want that from you all the time. And I'm thankful to have close friends who know that that is not, and they don't expect that of me. You know, I need those outlets of I'm sad today.
Right.
And
right.
I'm not going to cover this with humor.
Yeah.
Like, I need to actually just feel the feeling.
Yeah. I think one of the criticisms that I get, because similarly, right, like I do stupid reels and stuff that has nothing to do with church whatsoever. And then the next day I'm like, here's a clip of a fire sermon that I preached on Sunday. And it's just like, and then here's my kids and here's, you know, all across the board. And I think, like you said, it's easy to criticize women and people love to do it. But I think it's this idea of like, oh, you're being duplicitous. You're showing up and you're not being your authentic self, which actually, like, who in this living world shows up exactly the same way every single day? If you showed up funny every single day, if I showed up happy clappy every single day, that would not be authentic. That would not be
right.
real. And it doesn't mean that it's not real on the days that it happens, but right. Like, sometimes I'm sad. Sometimes I'm pensive, you know, sometimes I've like got a passion for a thing. And so I just think we need to shift people's perspectives that, hey, take a look in the mirror yourself. You're not the same every single day. And so you
right.
can't expect other people to be.
Well, I think there is something to be said too about women knowing themselves and like even your cycle, you,
yes.
you are 4 different people in the month. And then throw in like perimenopause or menopause.
Girl,
and
yes.
I'm like, I tell my husband, congratulations, you get a new woman every decade. Like, completely different.
Yep.
But just get allowing ourselves to change and grow. And I've had followers for a long time because I started like when blogging was a thing. Yeah. And it was exciting. I was a Blogspot. And nice. I've had people following me, you know, for like over a decade. And it encourages me when they say, I have loved watching you grow and change. I have loved watching you. Like, there's things I've had to publicly, I wrote about, and then I publicly said, I wrote about like modesty and I repent for what I said. And I've changed my mind. God has done a work. I'm getting, you know, free with my, body image stuff. Yep. And just to say that and to bring people along, I mean, it just shows that you're human. And I think it teaches people, I can repent. I can change. I can grow. And so some of having a platform, like, you know, and showing up on the internet is showing people, you're teaching people, like, this is a way to live. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that feels like I feel very responsible for showing up fully embodied in this space.
Well, and you said the key word there, which is growth. I think a lot of times too, in this very, you know, deconstruction, like there's a lot of people changing their minds. Some people love that word. Some people hate it. It can mean a bunch of different things. We've talked about it on this podcast many a time.
I know you whispered it. And we'll basically whispered it.
But that's the idea, right? For the people that are critical of it, I'm like, we're not just normalizing changing our minds. It is about growth. It's about saying, hey, I believe something different because now I understand it better. Now I understand it deeper. If I still believed everything that I believed in when I was 10 years old, you know, in the fifth grade going through confirmation, I think God would be a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie. Like, you're like, really? Nothing new?
Yeah, we couldn't get a little bit sharper on our theology there, you know. Yeah, I think that's true. You know, when Moses goes up on the mountain and he has an encounter with God and he comes down and he's glowing, there is something about encountering God that should change us. Like, if we have been with God, there's something that should change our countenance.
Yeah.
So if you continue to spend time with God every day and you are talking with him and you are being with him, there is going to be a change.
Yeah. Yeah. And if there's not, that means something. Lean into that.
Right. We got to look at that.
That's when we start asking questions, not of God or the church, maybe of ourselves and our quiet time routines.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you mentioned liking to find, you know, deep theology and the Greek behind things like that. I know that in your book, which we'll get to in a second, you mentioned you didn't necessarily feel called to college for a while, but now you're in seminary. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so how was this? How did you know that this was different?
I love that question. And I think what I was doing was what I saw, what was expected of me. So in my high school, you go to college. It was just the environment that whatever. So I thought, well, what can I do? I don't know. I could probably be a teacher. You know, I loved some of my teachers, and especially when you're in those like formative, like your fourth grade teacher, your second grade teacher. I mean, I loved my teachers and just you know, I thought, okay, I can do that. I love kids. I can tell them what I know. And, so I was just doing what I thought I should do. And when you're 17, I have a lot of like, what do you know? Right. What do you know?
You think you know everything, but not so.
Right. Well, you know everything. Yes. It's incredible how much you know. So who knows? I just did what I, you know, go to college, and I was going to be a high school English teacher. And then when I did my student teaching, I thought, how do I get out of this? Like, how I'm in too deep. And I was really disappointed in myself. I thought, you've wasted your parents' money. We grew up poor, and like, you just don't waste money.
Right.
And I've wasted my parents' money. They paid cash for me to go to college. Oh, wow. And, because I do have seven siblings, and, And I was the first one to, I have an older sister. She did not go to college. And so then I'm the one carrying the torch, you know, yeah. I'm going to go to college. And so I was disappointed yeah. that I didn't like what I was doing. Luckily, a church was like, we are desperate mm-hmm. and we need someone to do our children's ministry program. And that felt so much better for me. Okay. And I wouldn't even say it was like a calling. I wouldn't yeah. say like ministry has always been a calling. I think I was like, yeah, I would much rather do that
than this.
yeah. And so even in the like not knowing what I was doing and just kind of like moving forward and taking the next step and just trusting that God was going to work it mm-hmm. for good, I think I really did believe, you know, God is going to make this work for me. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. And I think he's going to have to show up for me. So there were some really feeble, like very feeble prayers. You know, the yeah. prayer that's like, not a lot of words
yeah.
here, but I have help. Uh-huh. Help me. Uh-huh. And I learned so much. I mean, looking back. So I write about, you know, I mean, that's what my book is about. Yeah. I really do believe that there aren't coincidences. I just don't believe in coincidences. And that if you look back at all those things where you say, I did not know what I was doing here, but God led me through this.
Yeah. And so you think that's what led you to seminary now? Was all of these formative little moments?
I think so. I think I've always loved learning.
Yeah.
I have loved the classroom, even though it looks different yeah. in different stages of life. And I think before I went to seminary, I was using the language like, I'm in DIY seminary, because I was just voraciously reading. You know, I got like a, you know, those like, they're like Greek concordant, yeah, you know, yeah. I'm like, I am desperate to find out what God thinks about women, because I had been in such fundamental spaces where women could do things.
So much,
and that was like, be a mother and be a wife. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And I was so desperate, because I have this, what do you do with these gifts that you can't use
right.
in your church?
Right.
But when I stepped outside of the church, I could use my gifts.
Yeah.
And I felt it was so disingenuous to my humanity to walk into these spaces and shrink so small yeah. and be just so quiet, have no voice. Mm-hmm. And so then I was desperate to find out what God says. And I was just loved it. I loved it. And so, you know, an opportunity came along where Denver Seminary was recruiting women who are already teaching, pastors,
yeah.
Authors, and they said, we want you guys to show, you ladies, to show the way.
Yeah.
And we want to fling open the door and say, women need to be in here. Women need to be in the classroom. And so I just said yes. I didn't even know what kind of seminary it was. Thank God he cares for squirrels of the seven Enneagrams.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I didn't even know what I was getting into.
And
so now I'm in it, and it's like, you know, you're standing in front of a fire hydrant you didn't even know existed.
Yeah. And you're doing it with, I know your part, I know some of the other women in your cohort. What has it been like to not just be like, okay, I'm going to go to seminary and I'm going to learn things, but to do it alongside this whole, just a team of women?
I would have quit.
Oh.
By now, I would have quit. And they would say the same thing.
Yeah.
I think what I thought was, oh, they are professors. We're out here working. We're doing stuff. We're authors. We're preaching. We're already doing this stuff. So they are going to be like, you guys, we're going to go easy on you.
Yeah.
Okay. We see what you're doing. And we are not going to treat you like a normal, regular grad student. And that was false.
Yep.
So they want you to cite properly. They want, you know, you have to actually research your brains out. Okay. And our professor, our first paper was like, hey, because we were like, do we write Bible studies? We write, like, you're writing opinion pieces, kind right. of like, this is what I learned and this is what I, and they're like, no, we don't care what you think. So our professor was like, you are going to just learn what other people say. Scholars who have dedicated their lives to this chapter in the Bible, book of the Bible. And they have dedicated their entire lives. So you don't get to have an opinion.
Yeah.
And we were all like, okay, humble pie. We don't know everything. And it's been really, really refreshing to not have to have an opinion on something and to just learn.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Yeah, I can just see. I can imagine. I would get an email that's like, hey, Kristen, this is not an Instagram caption. This is an actual research paper if I was in that cohort. So I totally get that there is a difference, actually. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So what's your goal at the end of it? And then we'll stop talking about seminary. But I think there's a misconception that it's like, you go to seminary so you can be a pastor, or you go to seminary so you can whatever. Is there a goal for you at the end of this? Or were you just saying yes to an opportunity?
Well, I'm not really good at goals, and which is great. You know, it's like, I just live my life. Like, my husband is the opposite of me. He's an Enneagram 3, and he is just like, task, goal, task, win, you know, just kind of achieve. And I wake up and I'm like, what is the wind going to push us towards? Like, what creative thing will happen for me today? So I, with that said, don't have a specific goal. It's par for the course at this point. I'm 42 years old, and I've learned God will do what he wants to do with it, and I get to enjoy the ride. And if that means that I end up working for a church or just being like, empowered and like and know the word so that I can teach better, like on Instagram. Yeah. I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Awesome. And I am an Enneagram 3, which is probably why I asked you that question.
Yeah, you're like, and what is your regimen? How many hours? No.
How do you know if you get a gold star or a check? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
All right. So you wrote a book. I would like to thank you for this book being on audio version, because I used it as an excuse this weekend to research, quote unquote. I listened to your entire book while I was walking around like Home Goods and At Home looking for new picture frames and things. So I was like, I'm actually busy right now. This is very important.
Yeah, I'm actually working.
But your book is called This Must Be the Place: Following the Breadcrumbs of Your Past to Discover Your Purpose Today. But this is not just a, like, everything happens for a reason book.
Yeah.
thank you. I'm glad that that's not the narrative. So explain how looking for breadcrumbs is a different vibe than that.
Yeah. Well, I think when Christians say everything happens for a reason, it's usually they're usually like bludgeoning people in the middle of grief with that phrase. You know, it's like, it would be like if someone were in a car accident and they're like dangling out of the car and they're bleeding, and you walk up to them and you're like, everything happens for a reason. And that's not helpful.
No, that's not even helpful. A little bit.
But I will say there is some of that, that this, I guess maybe could be controversial, but there is some of that, everything that happens for a reason, that you do come to, I think, as a person of faith, you do come to that in a place of healing where you say, he is working this for my good. And if you don't believe that he is working everything for your good, for those who believe in him, then it's very despairing. Mm. And so I, as a 7 Enneagram, one of my skills is that I can reframe. I am constantly reframing. And I think when you look at all the different personalities, whatever, they all have, I think they all reflect a piece of God. And so I think God is the great reframer. Mm-hmm. I think he, in the Bible, shows us the ways in which suffering and sin should have been the end, and then he makes a way and he reframes it. And then what is the Bible but just a collection of stories. Yeah. And they're weird.
Yes.
Like some of them, it's like, we could have done without that one.
How did we let this one in, but not some other important detail?
Right. It feels a little weird. But it's so human. Like it's such a human experience that we can't escape the weird or the wicked.
Yep.
It's the suffering. We can't escape it. So when I wrote this book, it was me saying women know a lot about other people's lives. They know a lot about their kids' lives. They are entrenched in their kids' lives. They know a lot about their spouse. They know a lot about the Kardashians.
Yes.
They know a lot about everybody else. But when it comes to themselves, they haven't taken the time to look back, and especially at things that they've buried and said, like, that was just bad. That just happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I've moved on and it's whatever. Mm-hmm. Instead of...
It is what it is.
Yeah. Instead of saying, like, there's maybe some treasure under there. Yeah. If you would be willing to do the work.
Yeah.
And I think as women, if you're willing to do the work, if you're willing to go say, you know what, actually, what did he work for my good there? How does that make sense for my life today? Because I think people think it's a pink book, you know, and it's like cute. And I think they're like, which another self-help book.
Uh-huh.
And which is so looked down upon in Christian communities, but there is something about reframing those stories, looking at your suffering, where people say like, "Oh, she doesn't know how it feels, the deep suffering." And so I say, that's why we talk about infidelity. That's why I share that story.
Right.
Because I want you, when we were going through it, I'm looking around like, is this just not happening to Christians? Because statistics say it's happening to Christians, but where are they?
Right. I'm not hearing about it. Yeah.
It was just, and this was what, like 15 years ago. So I'm looking on the internet and I found one person who was talking about it. And I mean to tell you, I read everything she wrote over and over again. And it was like a flashlight in the dark.
Yeah.
And even when we were trying to find people locally, like who can we meet with? Who can help us? People would come over, like, I'm not kidding, in the cover of night, because they didn't want people, you know, they'd be like, mate, nobody knows this.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Don't tell people came to help and love you.
Yes. Don't tell anyone that we've been through this, which I wouldn't, but
right.
It was just bizarre to me that we couldn't, I'm not saying tell it on the mountain. I'm not saying you have to go on the internet like me and be like, look at what happened to
sure.
us. But there is something powerful about sharing our suffering, letting people bear witness to our suffering. Mm-hmm. And then for me to tell you, I thank God for that season.
Yeah.
I thank God that happened to me. I would not wish it for you, but yeah. I thank God for what he did during that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just, I don't know any other way to feel God's like breath on your neck, like his nearness than through suffering. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I tell people I was spooning with Jesus, but then they don't love that. It's a little weird. But I'm like, well, I mean, we were that close, but you know, suffering is, it's just a magnet, and where it can be a magnet, straight to God and his mm-hmm. nearness. So if I wouldn't have reframed that and just said like, that was a thing that happened and I moved on. I mean, I think that, that feels really devastating to me because of all the lessons that I actually learned during that time.
Yeah.
But if someone were to say during that time, like everything happens for a reason, I would have punched them.
Yes. Right. Yes. I get that. And I think you do a really good job in the book also of you share and you tell your story and you relate, but you also center the reader or the listener, in my case, on audiobook, because I think one of the biggest things that the enemy uses to keep us from telling our stories is comparison, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so people can go, well, that, like, I haven't experienced infidelity in my marriage. I haven't experienced this quote unquote big T trauma. I haven't gone through anything X, Y, Z. And so therefore, my story doesn't matter, or it's not big enough, or it's not, you know, God hasn't done enough things. When really it's like, you're telling people in your words and in your examples, you're telling people like, hey, you are actually worthy enough of taking a look at your life. Like your life as it is valuable enough to God to take the time to go back and reflect and see where he's been this whole time.
Yes. I think this is just so God of like the God of details.
Yeah.
And if you don't think that your life is worthy of examining and that is precious and that you should like just be in awe of this life that God has put inside of you. First of all, that's not very pro-life. And second, I know someone's going to get mad.
No, not on this podcast. You're fine.
Be pro-life about yourself. Yeah. Tell my secret goal of this book, which I didn't tell my publishers, was that if you really did take the time to answer those questions, you don't need to be a good writer. You know, we get in the way of ourselves so that we don't have to do the work. You don't need to be a good writer, but if you can answer these questions deeply with thought, then you will have your own little memoir.
Yeah.
And I wish so desperately that women would take up more space with their stories. Mm-hmm. I don't think they value their stories enough. And what happens is at the end of your life, you get eulogized and it's someone else's perspective. Yeah. And they say, this is what my mom was like. This is what my friend was like. But we don't know what she thought about her life. And we don't know how layered and complicated those situations were. And it's I wrote this book to my children, which kind of makes me cry. I don't know why, but you know what? Yeah. It's that time of the month and I am feeling like an emotional lady. But I want them to see me taking up space with my story because I want them to take up space with their story. And I want them to know how deeply I trusted God and I still am trusting God and how it was not easy. And it was not, I'm not like a super Christian. Like my mom just so faithful. I want them to see how I faltered, how I got lost along the way, how I came back and God was never gone the whole time.
Right.
And so, you know, I think it's a powerful exercise in telling the truth and telling the whole truth to those around you and letting them bear witness to your magnificent life that God gave you.
Yeah. And when it doesn't feel magnificent, even still to know where he was in that, not for quote unquote a purpose. Like that's another thing that gives me the ick. Some people are like, oh, well, this bad thing happened to you so that you can help someone else in the future. Like, yes, but also it's not like that's the sole purpose or God would just be up there being like, bad thing, bad thing, bad thing, so that you can help somebody else. It is also for us in our own good and to be able to look back and see, like you said, where is he even in the midst of hard moments and all of that.
Yeah.
Well, I want to look at a couple of the little nuggets that you left for us on our treasure map in your book. And the first one you touched on earlier, but talking about your experience inside a very fundamental church and then coming out of it, you said in your book, you said, why did I feel free to be me outside of the church, but not inside of it? And as a woman in the church, that broke my heart. So I want to know if you still feel this way. And if not, hopefully how that changed for you.
Well, I was in a fundamental space for like a decade. So the church that I worked at was actually it was Anglican. It was there were women kind of everywhere.
Okay.
And then we went with a church plant and it was just, I don't know. It was just so new and fun and we're doing this community thing and, you know, it just kind of like devoured us. Mm-hmm. And we got so entrenched in it that it was like, you can't even see how dehumanizing it is to not be able to use your gifts because you have a uterus.
Yeah.
And I was working for my other company, which was, it was network marketing. So if everyone wants to get off the call, that's fine. but wait, I have an amazing business opportunity for you. No. And I kept thinking, why do I have no ceiling here? Why are they investing so many resources into us? And it was secular.
Yeah.
And so it was, I learned a lot business wise, but there wasn't God talk or anything like that. And so I thought, why aren't there these avenues for leadership in my church?
Yeah.
And it should be centered around God and him speaking through you, through your gifts. And it's also hard to have like the gift of teaching burning inside of you.
Right.
And then just to be so discarded. So, you know, we came out of that during, and this is new to me. So that was during the pandemic. When we couldn't go to church that long, it gave me a lot of space, and I examined it and thought, I just can't do this anymore. Yeah. And so then I took a break for a while, and then we just, I moved into another, you know, we kind of went with another church, and which was still, I would say, soft complementarian.
Okay.
But I really, and my pastor, who's a deep friend, dear friend, he really walked, we pushed each other as far as we could go. We read the books. We're reading each other's material. We are doing the work. We're doing it together. And then we just got to an impasse. And I'm like, I gotta jump. Mm. And so it was a breakup, but it was kind of healing because the church that we left was so embroiled in scandal before that, you know, it was just so nasty. And everyone was dispersed and everyone was despairing. And it was church trauma. I mean, it was like terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a healing kind of a breakup, like this is what a breakup should be.
Yeah.
In the church, gentle, it was sweet. We cried, you know, it was
like healthy,
just healthy.
Yeah.
And I just need to go somewhere else, like for my soul care. So, so now I'm back in an Anglican space, which is hilarious. Like, you know, I started there and now we're back, and that's new for me. I mean, I've only been there for probably 8 months, maybe.
Okay.
And so I'm just healing. I'm just healing in the back pew and receiving. And so if I wouldn't have done that deep dive, you know, and so I look at that time, it's tempting to say like, why did I stay so long? That was a waste.
Mm.
But I really have come to the place of like, thank you.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't experience that, if I didn't do that deep dive, I would not be in seminary, like learning and being prepped for whatever is coming next. I don't know what it is, but I am just so enjoying. I love God more. Like I am reading and understanding him in such a deep way that I love him so much more. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's kind of like an uncomfortable journey. And it's uncomfortable to say, like, especially like we're on a Christian podcast.
Yeah.
And so I don't want you to think I'm bashing the church, Big C,
no.
But, it's what happens in any family. It's what happens in any environment. It is tough.
Right.
It's tough. And deconstructing some of that stuff, which was a blessing for me. I needed to peel off some of that religion and get to Jesus.
Right.
And
right.
So I tell people, God is not afraid of your questions.
Yep.
He is not afraid of your curiosity. He is not afraid of your doubts.
Yep.
But you do that with him, right? We don't do that apart from him. He is your good shepherd. Like go to him and say like, I'm struggling with this question.
Yeah.
I don't know if I believe this. Mm-hmm. Help my unbelief. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of deconstruction in a healthy way with God.
Yeah.
And what comes out of it is you take the bones,
right.
You take the bones and you spit out the rest that doesn't.
Yeah. No, I also am I'm a big fan. I taught an 8-week class, at our church, basically for people that were like, I don't know what I believe anymore. And I was like, well, come on, bring your questions and we're going to read this deconstruction book and we're going to go through it together. I mean, our church's mission statement is that we exist to reclaim the message and the movement of Jesus because we believe so much has been added to the Bible and added to Christianity and added. We're like, exactly what you said. All of this religion can go, there are lots of churches in America where it can go live, but it's not going to live here. And so, yeah, we have all kinds of people with questions and whatever. And you can't argue against someone saying, I know Jesus more deeply. Like, we're spooning together now. Yes. I understand and love God more now. That you can't argue with that. You just can't.
Yeah. I there's just whole books about why deconstruction is bad. And I think that is going to someone in a car accident and leaning down over them and saying, you shouldn't have been riding in this car. Right. It doesn't help.
No.
It doesn't help. And it doesn't, all you're doing is shaming people for having honest questions. Yeah. And now you can't talk about it.
Right.
So I just don't, it's like, yeah, just don't ask them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's never once helped me.
Right.
Like that's, and I don't do that to my kids. I want them to be able to come to me and say, hey, I have this question.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel. That's how I feel like my relationship is with God.
Yeah.
Hey, God, I have this question. Will you help me?
Right.
So I'm really proud of you for leaning into that. So many people are so lost. And if you can't ask those questions inside church, you're going to go outside.
Right. Well, and I don't think God is like, hey, when you come to my house, I would like you to pretend and just come and like put on a face.
Yeah.
And make sure of it. Like we talked about earlier on social media, you're not the same every day. You don't think the same thing every day. And I just don't think that God, that's what God wants for his churches either. So you mentioned multiple times in the book, which this really, as a fashion girl, this stuck out to me, but you mentioned multiple times when you were talking about like student teaching and then going to children's ministry and all these different opportunities that you bought certain outfits or clothing pieces to like look the part. And so I want to know, looking back now, outside of the obvious that, you know, sweater vests were a clear fashion statement, why do you think that you did this?
I think I was trying to play the part. So it's one thing when you love fashion to just express yourself and you are just like, this makes me happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not what I was doing.
Right.
I was living in somebody else's expectations. So,
right.
You know, if you're going to be up in front of people, you better go get that suit, that Isaac Mizrahi suit. And LOL. And I still have it because it's so funny. It's in my closet. And it's so funny to me. But I mean, I look at her and it's so sweet. I mean, she was just so genuinely trying her hardest to live in these expectations and just play the part.
Yeah.
And so I put on the suit.
Yep.
And I think it's still tempting for me to do that.
Yeah.
It, just like we talked about earlier, it's still tempting for me to be the funny girl. Like put on the suit.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, people don't need to know that you really actually feel comfortable in sweatpants.
Right.
And but I look at back at those times with just such fondness. It's so tender and genuine. And, but I learned from it. Like,
yeah.
I don't need to do that to, show people that I'm doing important work or that I should be valued. Now, when I wear things, it's so fun to be in my 40s. Like, why is everyone so afraid to get older? I wear things because they're just so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I don't even care. There's like the color story stuff, which
is
great. Like some of us should not be wearing yellow, but, unless it makes you happy. But now I just buy clothes because they make me happy and I wear them because they're fun.
Yeah.
And so it's fun to be in my 40s. And I think in my 30s, how old are you?
41.
Okay.
We're the same age.
Maybe you can like agree, disagree. But in my 30s, I said I didn't care what people thought about me, but I did.
Oh, I did.
I for sure cared.
Yes.
100%. But I wanted to not care.
Yes.
And really badly. So then I just said, you know, oh, I don't care what people think. I totally cared.
Yeah.
And then something happened towards the end of my 30s where I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't care. I don't care a little bit. You know, I don't care as much. And then in my 40s, I do not care.
Yeah.
I do. And it's so freeing. I don't care what you think about my life or my deconstructing or my me going to seminary. I don't care that I don't fit into complementarian spaces anymore. Which was so like important to me to fit there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that tribal, like,
right.
If you mess up the ecosystem, you get shunned. It's kind of, and not like outright and sometimes outright, but really you just are kind of like, ooh, she's wild. Mm-hmm. Stay away from her. And so just really saying, I love who I'm becoming. Mm-hmm. I love who I am. There's lots of things that need to change and I am confident God will work those out of me, but the striving is mostly gone. And the needing approval constantly, it's just like, it gets better and better and better. So encouragement for those spring chickens out there listening.
No, when I came on staff at our church, I came on staff to lead a new campus, and I was a kindergarten teacher. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. I helped launch this church. I've been here since its beginning, but as a volunteer, like I was a kindergarten teacher. And so because of all of that, and I knew people were looking at me, and I'm extra, and I'm female, and all of the things, I proved it not with like the right clothes necessarily, but I was like, I'm going to wear so much makeup that you will not be able to see all of my inadequacies. I'm going to distract you with eyebrows as thick as, like, you know, fruit roll-ups and lips that are so overdrawn. You will think I am here for a children's birthday party. But that was my, I think I was just like, I have to control something, and this is what I can control. And so if I can look good enough, then I can prove to you that I should be here, when really I know that I should not be here because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Then maybe people will know that I am so scared.
Right.
I am so scared. And I think I'm going to mess this up.
Yeah.
And I'm fake. You know, mm-hmm. I'm faking it. And I don't know anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I'm not deserving of it. Or, you know,
Which none of it, you know, fake it till you make it. I think some of that is good, I think, in a sense, because bless your heart, you are so insecure. And some of it is you just taking your step forward really scared, but you are doing it afraid.
Yeah.
And we take our little battle, you know, it's like, here's my shield. And it's so funny because mine was a sweater vest.
Yes.
It's not really going to keep any bullets out, but I just, it's like my emotional support tank tops. Like, I need them, and I need it. So I think some of it, I just look, as you know, we're so human. And so we're going to have our little comforts.
Yeah.
And we take our little idols even. And God is so patient and tender with us that He still says, like, you're mine. And I can see you white knuckle gripping that idol. And He will gently, we learned in our lecture yesterday that pruning, the word pruning, is in the same word form as cleansing, like washing. And I think sometimes we think pruning, you're just breaking the sticks off and you're cutting it and you're throwing it into the fire. But in some senses, it's more like a foot washing. Like He's going to wash that off, that dirt off of you. And just how tender He is with us in our inadequacies and just in our makeup. In our sweater vest, you know, I mean, He is just like, oh, we're going to just remove that.
Foot exfoliation sounds a lot better than pruning, if I'm being honest. Like, it just, thank you, Jesus, for that.
We're going to loofah that. It's the only thing that can get through the layers. We're going to use a little pumice on it. But
Well, this reminds me, you mentioned in the book too, you reference like past Jamies. And I think you even said like, pictured this cemetery of past Jamies. And I think if everybody can just push into their morbid side for like just a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get that in we there. Can picture all of these past versions of ourselves. And so since they would be a captive audience there, your cemetery of past Jamies, beyond just like, here's what I've accomplished and here's what I've done. Yeah. What would you want to tell them? What would you want all of your past selves to know?
I think I would. Why are you asking me questions that make me cry? I personally like to cry publicly at least once a day.
Excellent. Well, you've done it twice now, so you can check it off the list.
Yeah. Well, and so some people excel, and I'm achieving, and I'm better than you. I think I would just say, like, you're doing a good job. Oh, like, hey, like, ease up a little bit on yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to be so hard on yourself. I mean, I'm thinking about as a young mother, you know, you're just like in it and you're so tired. Yeah. And like then you beat yourself up, like,
right,
get more done. You're not reading your Bible every day. You're not being a good teacher to your kids about God. Like, they don't know the memory verses. Like, right, you're not, you know, you're not good enough. And I think I would just, in each season, I think I would just say, like, you are going to be just fine. Mm-hmm. And you're doing a good job. And you are going to, like, get through this. Yeah. It is a season. This is not forever. Yeah. You know, and when you have someone, I mean, I think that's just the wisdom of aging. I think that's why we need mentors in our life who are ahead of us.
Yeah.
Because they can say that, like, they are you in the future saying to you what you needed to hear. And they can say, like, hey, you don't need to be trash talking yourself like this. You know, like, just, I think about how much time I spent trash talking myself, like, mm-hmm, either just physically, you know, passing by the mirror and being like,
sure,
you're so fat,
right,
you know, like, or like, or maybe like, just, why can't you be gentle and quiet, a gentle and quiet church lady, and instead of just appreciating the life that God gave me and the breath in my lungs and how strong my body was, and you just created four humans with your body, like, it's pretty amazing accomplishment, you know? Like, and then you fed them, and then you fed them with your body, and you know, so I don't know. I think that's a great exercise. I think that's why reflective work is so important, because if you can reflect on what you would have said to your past self, you can talk to yourself like that now.
Yeah.
When you're tempted to be so harsh with yourself. Women, we are good at that. Oh, we are so harsh with ourselves.
Yeah. That's so tender. And I thank you. Thank you for your, you know, let me just peel off so many layers of emotional support tank tops. You're wearing your favorite sweatshirt. I know all of these.
I am. You know it. It's saved. It's back.
Let me end with one last question. So our podcast is called Becoming Church. And so I want to know, thinking back to, you know, the idea of we're going to break out of like fundy Christianity and fundy religion and all of this, what are you doing now? Or what can our listeners do to become the church to people around them in their everyday lives?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think it's such a good question. In the fundamental spaces that I was in, it was all about, like, it was so inward.
Yeah.
It was like, how can we just inwardly make this machine work? And how can we give everything to our church? I mean, you were in the Bible studies, you were volunteering your time. Like, if you're going to volunteer anywhere, it's going to be at this church.
Mm-hmm.
And now I see, oh, my being the church in my neighborhood is vastly important work. And my neighbors aren't all believers at all. In fact, most of them, I would say, probably are not. And the act of hospitality, the opening our doors, that are neighbors feel free to tell me things that are deep and tragic and, you know, tender to them and for me to hold space for them feels like a sanctuary. Yeah. And our backyard is like our neighborhood park, essentially. Like kids, my kids hardly even jump on the trampoline anymore, but we have that trampoline back here to, you know, for you to go to the ER at least once a year. And yes. also because this is our ministry. Like this is, I want these kids and their parents to feel so welcomed that they, and so loved
right.
that they say like, what is her God like? And that they would become interested through the ways in which we live and our aggressive, we call it aggressive hospitality. Like we ask our neighbors over probably 3 times a week. And I'm not exaggerating.
Okay.
We, and they're like, no, we have lives. Like we cannot live in your backyard.
You're like, but what about tomorrow?
But yeah, but I know you don't have anything tomorrow. So this is awkward for both of us. And I'm just going to stare at you until you relent. But it's also like, we're in our front yard. We're like, people drive slowly in our cul-de-sac because so many kids are out. Mm. And that's unfortunate for them because then that gives us an opportunity to be like, Sarah,
yep.
what are you doing?
Uh-huh.
Did you just come from tennis? Tell me everything.
Uh-huh.
So I think like, you know, a little harassing our neighbors in the best way, but now it's just so commonplace that it's very, very common to have 10 couples in our backyard, mm-hmm. You know, sharing. We go, and make it easy. Like if you're like, how do I do this? Make it easy. We have like Freezer Friday, which I just made up. I'm like, you can't make anything. It has to be from your freezer or like something that's in your refrigerator, hopefully not rotten, but the kids might still eat it. And we just come out with frozen pizzas. It's the most random thing. And all the kids are playing. There's no pressure. And to me, that just feels like holy and my ministry and where, and I'm just so happy in it.
Mm. I would be there for Freezer Friday every week. You got me a frozen pizza. I'm like, let's yeah. go.
Are you a zhuzher? Are you like a frozen pizza zhuzher? Do you like?
No. I mean, if you zhuzh it and make it fancy, I'll still eat it. But catch me almost every Friday eating the pieces of my kids' frozen pizza. They're like, Mom, I want another piece. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry you ate it all. There's no more.
I'm a notorious zhuzher. Yeah, I'm a notorious zhuzher.
So what do you do? What do you put on it?
Right now I'm obsessed with, well, first of all, you need to be putting like, you know, Italian seasoning, do a little garlic seasoning, do a little onion, a little season. So seasoning is easy. That's low hanging okay, yeah. fruit. You can do this. Anyone can do that. But currently I've been doing a little cottage cheese on top and really? It ministers. It okay. ministers.
Okay. That still counts.
You give me protein.
If you're baking or making something to put on your frozen pizza, I feel like that breaks your rules. But cottage cheese, I'll allow. It's just a spoon
and
a slab.
Oh, yeah. It's from a container.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Well, Jamie, this has been an absolute delight. And I would just like to clarify that I mean both in the moments you are making us laugh and in the moments that you were crying and just being tender and honest and vulnerable. And so thank you for being here and just showing up exactly how you are today.
Well, I mean, it's a roller coaster. I like to give everyone a little like emotional whiplash. We laugh, we cry, but you're not bored. But
that's
you're
not bored. Right, that's right. Well, we'll link up your book and your Instagram and everything in the show notes so people can come and follow you, which I suggest that they do. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
I want to leave you with one more treasure that Jamie left for us in her book, which is this statement. I become more me by getting my hopes up. That has stuck with me because it is both poetic and actually a little bit frightening. But I hope you've been encouraged through this conversation to become more you, that you've heard permission to grow and to change and to live in all spaces as the person that God has uniquely created you to be. I've linked up a few more resources on how exactly to figure out who that is and how to live as your full self with confidence. So I hope you'll find those helpful. Until next time, keep becoming the church to the people around you.